And the reason will come for us all.
Hey, Samantha, guess what?
What?
It's almost our 100th episode, and you know what that means.
Special episode time, and also Bigfoot?
Yep, Bigfoot, that's right. If you are so inclined and you want to know more information about us, we are going to do a bonus Q&A episode for you. So be sure to write us in at reapergals@reapertales.com to submit your questions. You can also reach us, mostly Samantha, on our social media at
Reaper Tales Podcast on Facebook and Instagram.
We will consider all and any questions as long as they're appropriate. We're not going to tell you our bra sizes. I'm sorry. Anyways, we look forward to our 100th episode, and we can't wait to hear from you. Hello, I'm Montana.
And I'm Samantha.
And you're listening to
Reaper Tales.
And today,
I'm going to tell Montana about a Black Widow, because I haven't done that in a while. But before we get into the story, Montana, what are we drinking? Or what are me and Kelsey drinking?
You guys are drinking some Black Widow beer?
Cider.
Yeah, hold it up to the camera. Cider. Yeah.
Original Sin is the...
And yeah, that's a great image right there, Kelsey. Right up,
yeah,
up top.
The can is actually pretty.
It's very pretty. Yeah. I was going to swing by Kelsey's tonight to pick up one of the beers. But I didn't. I was a grease monkey today because I worked on my car with friends. So that took all day. Oops.
Apparently.
No, I took all day off. We thought it was going to... I literally got there and they were like, oh, it's going to take an hour. 4 hours later.
No, that's a classic guy move. That's like when a girl says, I'll be ready in 15 minutes, and it takes her 30 to 45. A guy says, I'm going to work on my truck for an hour. That means 4 to 6, just FYI.
Yeah, yeah, truly. Yeah, 100%. What I didn't know is that a portion of my bumper was held on by zip ties. Yeah. Oh, Kelsey's face. Yes, yes. It's no longer held on by zip ties. We fixed
that. Well,
that's
a relief.
Yeah, thankfully. Anyway, I'm excited to hear about your Black Widow case.
All right. Well, cheers.
Cheers.
This is an interesting one that Montana actually sent to me. So.
Oh, is it? Oh, it's the old lady Black Widow in North Carolina. Oh. I let you encroach on my territory.
You don't want to do Black Widow, so...
No, I don't.
We've already established somehow, somewhere along the way, the Black Widows ended up becoming my thing, so it's only fair.
I'm here for it. So, tell me about them.
And you want to hear about it. So today, I have another Black Widow for you. Today's Black Widow happens to be the oldest woman currently on death row in the state of North Carolina at the age of 91. FYI, North Carolina hasn't executed anyone since 2006, and it doesn't seem likely that they're going to change that fact anytime soon. Meaning she's more likely to die from natural causes than lethal injection. That being said, apparently not even cancer could take her life early, so there's no telling how long she'll live before death comes for her. Or maybe he's just avoiding her, to be honest.
I mean, I would too. Truly.
So, starting at the beginning, Blanche Kaiser was born February 17th, 1933. So she just had her 91st birthday in Concord, North Carolina. To parents, Parker Davis Kaiser, who was a mill worker and an ordained Baptist minister. I guess they had to have a side hustle because they probably weren't paid real great. And Flonnie Blanche Kaiser. It was reported her father was a womanizer and alcoholic, and Blanche later claimed that he even forced her into prostitution to pay his gambling debt. He died in 1966 with some reports saying it was due to a heart attack.
Oh.
And I say some reports because, come on, we know I'm talking about a Black Widow. So,
yeah. Okay.
Blanche married her first husband, James Napoleon, heck of a middle name, Taylor, on May 29th, 1952. She had two daughters with Taylor in 1953 and 59. She began working at a grocery store, reported in some sources to be a Kroger, in 1954, which I didn't know Krogers were around that long, honestly, as a cashier, and was promoted to head cashier in 1959. And according to ABC11.com, that was the highest position a woman could hold at the time. Head cashier. She was said to be a good employee, though some coworkers claimed she could be very vindictive and two-faced.
With great power comes great responsibility.
Head cashiers, man. Just 3 years later, she and her manager, Raymond Reed, began having an affair.
Oh.
It was after she was promoted, though. That's an important distinction.
Oh, it was after. Okay. So, sure. Okay.
Probably. Maybe. Who really knows? Apparently, Reed was transferred several times over the next 2 years until he was promoted to manager of the Winston-Salem, North Carolina location. According to an appeal document I found, a Kroger risk management investigator testified that Reed had said the two of them, quote, probably would have been married, except she wanted to be there next to her family, end quote.
What? Okay.
Her first husband died on October 2nd, 1973, at the age of 45.
Ripe old age.
Of a heart attack.
45. Oh, my God.
That was the official cause of death. So once her husband was dead, Blanche and Reed decided to make their relationship public, which lasted until his passing at the age of 50 in 1986. His cause of death was... so the first one was 45.
He's 50. How old is she?
86. Let's see. Born in 33. So she would have been 53.
Okay. All right.
So
I didn't know if she was like close. 10 years younger. Yeah. No, so she's like
fairly close
same.
To his age. Okay. So this was 13 years after her first husband died. But she actually didn't get married to Reed before he died either. So they were just like together, not married.
Yeah, like a domestic partnership situation.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I know people who have had partners, husbands, whatever, die in their 30s. And like, not sketchy like that. Like, we know what happened. They also have been gone on to marry other people who died quickly afterwards.
It happens. But I feel like the number three definitely had warning signs since this happened twice
yeah.
before. The first one definitely could be a fluke. Maybe he did die young and it was in his family or something. The second one, it happens again. I ain't going to be the third. Sorry. I'm going to stay away from this, whatever's going on. I don't care if it's bad luck or if it's actually your fault. I'm just going to stay away.
Yes.
Correlation doesn't always mean causation. However, be careful. So Reed's cause of death was initially ruled to be due to Guillain-Barré syndrome.
That's what counsel has.
Okay. So that was the initial cause of death. There were some rumors that she had begun another... By the way, before he died... I'm just letting you know he did die because that might as well go ahead and get that out. There were also rumors that she had had another relationship while she was with Reed with the regional manager who was named Robert J. Hutton. And when the relationship with Hutton ended, she quit and filed a sexual harassment lawsuit against him and the store in October 1985. As a result of the lawsuit, Hutton was forced to resign. And the case was settled for $275,000.
What?
In 1985.
They had evidence that this occurred, obviously. Because they paid out.
I'm thinking that the sexual harassment was settled because they had evidence of a relationship. And she came back and said it wasn't consensual, basically. That's kind of the gist of what I get. I mean, that's kind of how it seems. She also accused some unknown pervert, that's the words they use, of setting two fires that damaged her mobile home in 1985. So this was a busy year for her.
Samantha, I just hate when the neighborhood perverts just set fires around my house. I can't. I'm on next door all the time.
Like, was he looking through the window before he set your house on fire? I don't really understand why he's a pervert.
Oh my God. Let me see her titties.
Oh, she saw me. Let me set this on fire.
Oh shit, my fire is out of control. What the fuck are you talking about?
Like, when I thought it's a pervert set fire, I'm like, those two don't correlate. Like, I don't understand what happened here. No, it doesn't. And twice.
Why are you saying that?
Twice in 1 year. Twice in 1 year. Two perverts, maybe it's the same one. Who knows?
It's just a weird dude going around masturbating in people's window while he has fire. Like a lighter. He's like, yeah. I'm sorry, cut that, Kelsey.
Wow. Okay. That really went off the rails.
I don't care.
That's going to become a video for TikTok right there. That's what that's going to do. Oh, yeah. Like,
that definitely needs to be a video.
Why would you describe it that way? And just, yeah. I'm so sorry.
Hey.
We're going to take it seriously. I'm done.
Yeah, okay. Sure.
Okay.
So, continuing, Blanche initially met Reverend Dwight D. Moore, a divorced pastor of what was then Carolina United Church of Christ in Almanence County on Easter Sunday in, you guessed it, 1985.
Samantha, you got to say that again. You have to say Almanence.
Almanence?
I think it's Almanence. Yeah.
Okay. I said it again. Why?
They're real particular about the way you say that shit over there.
Okay. I said Almanence.
Okay.
Again. Okay. Look, are they going to come for me? Are they going to come 7 hours to come see me?
Every once in a while, I get emails where you said that shit wrong.
I really don't think it's going to bother him too much. So anyway, this is again in 1985. She met this reverend at, I'm assuming, church, since it was on Easter Sunday, because obviously she was going to be there.
Where else would you meet them?
Right? They started spending time together and the relationship deepened over the years.
Gross.
They got married on April 19th, 1989. So did you catch that, by the way? Because if the rumors are all true, she was with Reed and having an affair with her regional manager and spending time with this pastor all in 1 year, the same year that the pervert set her place on fire twice.
You need to, the pervert, you need to keep your options open, I guess.
Very open, apparently.
I mean, I don't.
Well, but so she ended the relationship with the regional manager in 85. So obviously that was a dud. She kept the pastor on the line and then she, unfortunately, Reed passed away the next year. So
you can kind of see
where she was leaning in this situation.
Is she like, well, you're going to tell me. I was going to ask, is she poisoning them? Is she like suffocating them? Is she like, what is it? No, but you're going to tell me.
I had no plans of telling you whatsoever what her mode was at all. We were just going to leave it up in the air.
Is she like, is it arsenic? Is it like, what is it? A heart attack? Like a heart attack? Samantha,
you're
a heart attack?
You're going to have to wait to find out, just like all the listeners.
Okay. Well, I should just like, just let me know. What can I expect?
You'll find out. Not long after they returned from their honeymoon, in May of 1989, Blanche's second husband, Reverend Moore, was admitted to North Carolina Memorial Hospital in Chapel Hill, North Carolina, for treatment and was officially diagnosed with arsenic poisoning when it was discovered that he had 20 times the lethal dose of arsenic in his system.
Well, that's not normal.
Some reports said it was up to 100 times. So somewhere somewhere between 20 and 100 times, but a lot. One thing they all agreed on was that no one expected him to actually live.
Enough that the scale didn't matter.
Yeah, basically. I mean, I guess once you get past 20, it's kind of like when you have kids. Once you get past 3, you're already outnumbered. So what difference does it make? I mean, why not?
Kelsey is just like, yeah.
But, you know, so they've all basically expected him to die. So obviously that level of arsenic poisoning, probably intentional. So the police were called and they interviewed him at the hospital while he laid in what they expected was going to be his deathbed. And somehow, miraculously, he surprised everyone and survived.
I would like to know where he got his kidneys and liver.
He got them from somebody else, more than likely.
Is it a wholesale? Did you, like, secondhand shop this shit? Like, let me know.
He definitely needed replacements. I mean, there's no way. So, you know, as you can imagine, this raised suspicion. As I mentioned, the police were called. But then people started wondering about her previous boyfriend, who had very obvious symptoms if you attributed it to arsenic poisoning. So they began investigation into the deaths of Blanche's father, P.D. Kaiser, her mother-in-law, Isla Taylor, her first husband, James N. Taylor, and her previous boyfriend, Raymond Reed. Every single one tested positive for arsenic. Her father and mother-in-law both tested positive for arsenic with higher than normal levels, but not lethal doses. Her first husband, Taylor, and Reed revealed toxic levels 60 and 30 times higher than normal, respectively. They did exhume another body, that of a former coworker, Joseph Mitchell, but he didn't show any evidence of arsenic poisoning, so she just didn't like him and he happened to die, I'm assuming.
I gotta ask, like, we talk about Black Widows on here. How do you get a hold of arsenic? Like,
oh, I'll go over how she did it. That's literally like, not the next paragraph, but the paragraph after. How do you always time it like that, by the way?
I don't know. Because I was thinking, I was like, how do you even like get it? Like, what is...
It's usually rat poison. I mean, way back when, it had higher than the levels that they do now, obviously. But it had arsenic. Rat poison had arsenic in it. So that was the most common way that people would get arsenic was out of rat poison.
Oh, okay. I thought it was like something you had to go to like a
You're
chemist
not the
and
expert
be like
on Black Widows.
Hello, I would like some arsenic to kill my husband. And so
you know, that's a little too obvious.
And so the alchemist would be like, okay, here's enough to maybe kill them. Good luck. I didn't know like
they just
so
have
stupid.
A really bad rat problem every 5 years or so.
No, I knew it was something like to do with like dealing with weeds or like pests or something. I didn't know like how you actually got it. And so I was just like, how are people just like getting this shit?
Well, it depends on the year too, because like earlier times, people just didn't think much about selling poisons and they could get it pretty readily.
Yeah,
you know, at the alchemist store, like they would just say, hey, I need this other thing to kill rats. And they're like, oh, cool. Here you go. And it literally
good
give them straight up
your
arsenic.
Husband.
Yeah.
I mean, like, your rats.
Wink, wink, wink. I don't like them either.
Yeah,
just,
no.
Just,
but
just
when,
put a 50.
When you said that, I was just, like, rats, what?
Push a 50 over.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't think it was very hard. It's gotten harder, obviously, because this stuff started coming about. But, you know, for the longest time, people couldn't fathom the idea that women would have it in them to kill their husbands. They were just
bless our
considered,
hearts now.
Like, ridiculously unlucky and, you know, whatever you do, don't marry them.
Please don't marry me.
Or whatever. Well, you're already taken, so... Reed's body was exhumed on June 13th, 1989. When the autopsy was performed, it revealed clearly recognizable Mies lines across the fingernails of both the hands, and the toxicology report indicated a concentration of arsenic in Reed's liver tissue that was 30 times higher than one might see in the average individual who is not having a significant exposure to arsenic. The amount found in his brain was approximately 67 times higher than expected. So and also, needless to say, the findings, you know, made the examiner decide and reach the conclusion that he died from arsenic poison. And another expert that they brought in actually analyzed the hair that they took from the body and found 70 times higher than the normal level in the hair. And it also indicated that he had been poisoned multiple times over a long period of time.
Once you said 60 times in his 67. Brain, I was like, okay, 67.
Nearly 70, within his brain.
Almost 70 within his brain. That's significant. And then hair, that's long-term poisoning. Also, I'm so sorry about her. She's upset.
She's not. She wants to be the center of the attention. I thought it was interesting how they saw different levels in different areas. Now, the hair I can kind of understand because, I mean, it's like drug testing that holds it for a much longer period of time. But the brain compared to the other testing that they did was over twice.
But your brain is nothing but like muscle and fat. So it's going to retain anything better than anything else within your body. But it takes longer to retain that than other portions. So if like you went and snorted a line of cocaine right now, they could test
your
blood.
How long would it take?
Well, when can you get in?
I'm learning things here. I'm just encouraging you to keep talking.
Your blood would immediately like test positive, but something like your brain tissue is not going to immediately. It takes like long-term exposure and like long-term use and also like a while afterwards. It's the same thing like if you smoked weed or you went and like snorted cocaine or whatever, if you went immediately and peed, it's not going to show up on a drug test right then. Your body, your liver, your kidney, like those things need to like process those drugs.
See, Kelsey, that's the soundbite we need.
Please don't. <It's a soundbite>. No, but it's true. It's true. Like long-term, like your hair is going to retain that stuff because your hair retains anything that you do.
I knew the hair did.
Your blood's immediately going to show any type of like trauma or anything that you do to your body. You know, your urine's going to show within a 24-hour period. It's like an entire, like, you can see, like, different stages of it. But your brain,
to
me,
your body processes it in the different areas.
Your brain's a muscle. So for it to, like, retain something like that, it's like, I'm not a doctor. I don't know how a brain works or, like, muscles work. But it's like, holy shit.
I don't know how your brain works.
No one does. Good luck if you can figure it out. Please call me if you do. Actually, you can call me. I won't answer.
Actually,
that's
you're
how
right.
My brain works.
You can text her and she won't answer. Apparently, just ask Paul.
Paul, I'm so sorry. Oh my God, I feel so bad. No, I don't feel bad because I did text him.
So this time, the arsenic was thought to have come from a product that was called anti-ant, which the main ingredient is arsenic. There were several testimonies of people who had seen her purchase it, recommended it to a customer while she was working at Kroger, or other people had actually purchased it for her and given it to her and told her where they got it from. So
that's
anti-ant.
Wait,
that's your answer.
Anti-ant? Is that like antifreeze? Is antifreeze?
No, it was ant poison.
The same thing as arsenic? What is antifreeze?
No.
Kelsey, don't look it up. No. Antifreeze goes in your car, right? No, your refrigerator? It doesn't matter, Kelsey.
Antifreeze goes in your car.
Okay.
You want me to elaborate?
No, I know
good?
That people. I know that
I'm
people
just making
will
sure
poison
you're,
people
we're
with
all
antifreeze.
Good.
I'm not up on the Black Widow. Like, you know, I'm not in
I'm
the
not,
Black
I didn't
Widow.
Even say antifreeze. You said it. I don't.
You said anti ant.
You are.
And
you
I
have
was
not
like
taking
antifreeze?
Your medication today. There's no way.
I didn't take it. No, you're right.
Okay. Yep. Okay. That explains a lot. Okay. So
I'm sorry.
Because of the levels of arsenic in Reed and Taylor, the state initially chose to focus their case on both of their deaths, but eventually they focused on Reed alone. That being said, despite the fact that they did not bring the others into the investigation, I'm pretty sure we all know what happened there. Like, It doesn't take a rocket scientist to figure that out.
That's like assumed guilt. Yeah.
Rocket surgery.
Rocket surgery.
That commercial from so long ago. They initially arrested Blanche and charged her with first-degree murder for the deaths of both Taylor and Reed and assault with a deadly weapon in the poisoning of Moore, which I thought was interesting instead of attempted murder. But I guess they didn't have enough evidence for attempted murder. I don't know. I mean, they all thought he was going to die, so I don't know why they wouldn't go with that.
It seems like attempted. I don't know. I'm not a doctor.
Assault with a deadly weapon is just interesting. I've covered Black Widows before. I don't think I've ever heard of them doing that instead of attempted murder, but
yeah,
what do I know? I'm not a lawyer.
Yikes.
The trial for the murder of Raymond C. Reed Sr. took place on October 15th, 1990. One thing I found interesting in this case was that the judge ruled that the prosecutors could discuss the poisonings of James Taylor, Dwight Moore, and Kaiser, even though the trial was only about the murder of Reed, which typically they won't allow that. So
yeah,
that was kind of interesting.
If it's not like proven evidence, right? Or proven.
I'm not a lawyer, so I don't know.
Seven agrees.
But in this situation, like I said, I don't know that I've ever covered a case where they've allowed that, but in this one they did. So I did find an appeal document that detailed the situation of the poisoning Reed went through, and it gave a lot more detail than previous cases I've covered. So I am going to go through and read the full extent of what he went through. Because it's terrible. And if you're...
great.
I'm sorry, but it's only fair because this man went through hell for the amount of time that he stayed in the hospital. But also, it shows how absolutely terrible this woman was. Because I'm not about to, like, praise her for anything that she did whatsoever. So, Reed... And this is all quoted from the appeal document, so it's directly from the court documentation. So here goes nothing. Reed initially became ill on January 1st, 1986, having spent New Year's Eve with the defendant and having eaten some of her homemade potato soup, Reed began experiencing severe symptoms of nausea, vomiting, and diarrhea. Reed, who had never been known to miss work, was absent from work for more than 4 weeks over the next few months. His last day at work was the 29th of May, 1986. Reed's condition became progressively worse. He was admitted to Wesley Long Hospital in Greensboro, North Carolina, on the 30th of May, 1986, by his physician, Dr. Norman H. Garrett, Jr. On admission, Reed reported to Dr. Garrett that while eating supper 7 days earlier, he had experienced nausea, vomiting, and dehydration, and that he had become violently ill, and that he had been unable to keep down any solid foods since that time. Dr. Garrett's admission diagnosis was acute gastroenteritis based on his profound dehydration, nausea, and vomiting. While hospitalized, Reed's condition continued to deteriorate, and Dr. Garrett revised his diagnosis to multiple systems failure based on Reed's symptoms, including excessive nausea and vomiting, loose stools, skin rash, edema, dehydration, bone marrow damage, blood cell abnormalities, electrolyte abnormality, tachypnea, I guess, progressive shortness of breath, which is what that means, respiratory failure, tachycardia, which is fast heartbeat, I know that one all too well, low blood pressure, kidney malfunction, and shutdown, and numbness and tingling in his hands and feet. So, wow.
I'm just, like, so upset that she used potato soup as
I know.
The...
I know you were going to hate that part.
...way to, like, poison somebody. Because potato soup is
But it wasn't your
so
loaded potato soup.
No, it wasn't.
So it's not the same.
I'm still upset about it.
Each of these symptoms, by the way, is characteristic of arsenic poisoning. By the morning of the 5th of June, 1986, Reed's condition had stabilized. Dr. Garrett informed Reed in the defendant's presence that he need only remain in the hospital for 3 or 5 more days following his circumcision. The procedure was the result of an infection and was not related to his other symptoms. That is not explained, and I kind of wish it was.
No, what?
That seems...
No, why was this in the notes? Why was that in the notes?
And it was not explained. And I'm like,
why would you read
that three times? And I was like, wait, what?
Sir, you've been poisoned.
Also, 3 to 5 days?
We've gotten you well enough, but also we need to cut the skin off your penis. What?
Apparently, it was because it was a result of an infection.
What?
I have no idea.
What hospital was this? I mean, I do know that people. I do know that people with like who don't get circumcised, they can get like pretty bad infections.
I mean, he's been in a hospital bed basically for 6 months, so. Yeah. It's entirely possible that that would happen. It was just really interesting that they decided to include that and say, so we had this procedure. It didn't have anything to do with what was going on currently. It was something else that happened, but just thought we would mention it.
I think it's weird to me that it was in like court documentation. Hey, nothing that has to do with this court. You know what?
They're being thorough.
It would be like, hey, Montana, we know that you, like, robbed this bank, but also you have explosive diarrhea on the same day. What?
And your visits to the bathroom are not excused.
Yes. What are you talking about? This is so wild.
So in any case, it's in the documents for some reason. I don't know. However, Reed's condition worsened.
I'm not going to question it, except for how it is.
There's a reason. We don't have to know the reason. There's just apparently one. However, Reed's condition worsened so much over the next week that it became life-threatening, and Dr. Garrett transferred him to North Carolina Baptist Hospital in Winston-Salem on the 13th of June in 1986. Dr. Garrett was never able to make a satisfactory diagnosis of the cause of Reed's multi-system failures, which I'm kind of, I mean, since all of those were symptoms of arsenic poisoning, I wonder why it never even occurred to him to at least test. Like, this is the 80s. There had been plenty of Black Widows, like, in the media and stuff over a period of time before this. And it never even occurred to him to test.
But nobody expects, like, a 50-year-old, like, and back then, like, 50-year-old women, like, when we turn 50, we're still going to look, like, old but hip and with it, like, getting like around and shit like that.
Look old. Hey, I'm not that far we're away from it. I'm closer to 50 than I am 20, so watch
it. Yeah, I mean, like, that's, yeah, exactly. It's like the generations are, like, kind of making it more, like, appealing to be older. But back then, it was like, as soon as you hit 40, you had, like, the Golden Girls haircuts and everything was gray and everything. Like, you were old. Like, that's what it was. And so I would assume, like, back then in the 80s, people were like, oh, she's old because she's 50.
Giggling granny.
Yeah.
She's old. My just guy. People. I'm just saying.
I just told a story about a woman who scaled a mountain at 70. Let's be so fucking real right now.
That's fair. That's very fair. Well, apparently it never occurred to him. So his next doctor, Dr. Robert Hamilton, a specialist in internal medicine and nephrology, who treated Reed at Baptist Hospital, testified that Reed was admitted with a number of symptoms, including a raspy voice, severe swelling in his lower extremities, anemia, low white blood cell count, and a rash over his lower extremities, white patches in his mouth, very poor bowel sounds. I know that they do that, but that's just, I've never seen
why,
that
why
either.
Why are you telling me about his bowels? Please stop.
Well, he's ingesting arsenic. What do you think is going to happen? Difficulty also, breathing and signs of kidney failure.
When you said whatever it was, I was like, nephrology. Nosferatu? Is this a vampire doctor?
Remember a minute ago when I said the reason why this is taking longer?
I'm so sorry. Please go on. I'm done.
Reed's condition continued to deteriorate, resulting in a code blue on the 21st of June in 1986. Emergency measures were taken and Reed was intubated so that he could be mechanically ventilated. Over the next few days, Reed became nearly paralyzed. So this is over almost 7 months. This is how long it's taken. Dr. Hamilton began with a preliminary diagnosis of Guillain-Barré syndrome. Reed showed some slight improvement following a procedure called plasmapheresis. In this procedure, the patient's blood is removed from his body. The red blood cells are separated from the plasma, and the red blood cells are returned to the body. The lab report from a urine sample obtained from Reed between 27th of June 1986 and the 28th of June 1986 showed quite elevated levels of arsenic in the urine. Dr. Hamilton, however, never saw the results of the test.
Oh.
How? Reed further improved during July of 1986, but continued to have difficulty breathing and needed to be on a respirator. Reed gradually recovered the use of his extremities and was able to breathe on his own. During this time, the defendant asked Dr. Hamilton if she could bring food from home for Reed and was given permission to do so. At the end of September, Reed suffered another serious setback. Lisa Hutchins, the head nurse in the intensive care unit, testified that the last time she saw Reed looking well was on the 1st of October, 1986, when she visited him in the intermediate care unit. Defendant was with Reed and was feeding him banana pudding. Hutchins again visited Reed on the 3rd of October, 1986, in his room in the intermediate ward. Reed was in, quote, acute respiratory distress and was very frightened. He pleaded with her to please help me or I am going to die. Reed was returned to the ICU on the 4th of October, 1986. Nurse Hutchins recalled the defendant often bringing Reed food items from home, such as iced tea, frozen yogurt, milkshakes, and soups during this time.
Why are they all liquids?
Well, I mean,
red
think
flag.
About it. Well, I mean, they're all liquids because that's all he could actually ingest.
No, I know, but it's also like, why are you feeding
That's
him?
That's the red flag right there. Why are you still letting her bring food from outside when he is deteriorating? And the fact that she feeds him and immediately he begins to deteriorate is also kind of a red flag. And the fact that two of her previous relationships, they're dead. So, I mean, there's red flags all over the place that everybody's ignoring.
They've gotten better in today's age, like with taking food in. Like my brother was in the hospital for a while and he had asked for chicken nuggies. And so I got chicken nuggies and I tried to like sneak them in. He was in the ICU, but like I like tried to sneak and they were like,
yeah, no,
no. That normally they let me pass, and somehow one of the nurses, she like smelled it or something,
no,
and she was
you
like,
"Probably
no.
Looked guilty as fuck."
Probably, I'm not good at lying.
I mean, like, I've known no. you for over a decade. You looked guilty. I can attest to that.
I just like fisted them all into my mouth at that point. I was like, "No, you're not going to take these from me."
I 100% unwell. Believe that. All right. Stephen Reed, one of Reed's sons, testified that he visited his father on the 4th of October in 1986 and found that he had eaten a breakfast prepared by the defendant. He stayed until late that afternoon and visited again on the 5th before returning to East Carolina University in Greenville, North Carolina. When Steve called on Monday, October 6th, the defendant informed him that he should return to the hospital as soon as possible. When he arrived on the evening of the 6th, he hardly recognized his father. He looked as if he had gained almost 100 pounds, and his eyeballs were even starting to swell, and his skin was starting to split. Dr. Kyle Jackson testified that Reed became progressively weaker and unable to continue his breathing on his own well enough to sustain life. By the 7th of October, Reed was in... Kelsey, you can correct me. Inotropic drugs and mechanical ventilation. Was on inotropic. I think that's right. He was able to communicate only with his eyes. In the early afternoon, Reed coded, and the responding medical personnel began administering CPR and to perfuse his heart in order to give him emergency drugs. Dr. Jackson pronounced Reed dead from complications, which he thought were attributed to, still thought were attributed to, the Guillain-Barré syndrome. Several witnesses recalled that moments after Reed passed away, the defendant stated, "We cannot have an autopsy. He has been through too much. He wouldn't want to be cut on like this. We just cannot have one."
He's dead?
Yeah. That's it.
What?
That's it. I mean, that's...
Well,
if there was ever a case where there's a lot of red flags and we should probably make sure we know the cause of death by doing an autopsy, this is... I feel like this is a pretty good one. He's been in the hospital for 10 months.
Yeah.
What? Okay. Sure.
He's dead.
I don't think he cares.
He has deceased.
He's not there anymore.
Expired.
And you know what?
Past the due date.
Here's the crazy thing. They weren't married. They weren't married. So legally, she should not have been able to override if his kids had asked for an autopsy, right?
Yeah, she should have.
Because she wouldn't have been the next of kin. I make that point for a reason. There was a lawyer that came while he was in the hospital and changed the will and power of attorney to Blanche, which eliminated his sons from his will and made it so that she also shared in the proceeds of his life insurance. The lawyer testified that Reed seemed to be of sound mind and the documents were executed legally with notaries and witnesses. In other words, saying, wasn't me. I didn't do anything. I did my job.
No. Well, Tugger's second guessing you over here.
I see it. He's giving me some side eye over there. He's giving me some serious side eye.
He's like, are you sure?
I don't think that's what that means. I don't think so. For her part, Blanche denied having ever fed Reed while he was in the hospital and even took it a step further, denying she even saw him have any food at all during that time. She claimed to also have nothing to do with the changes of his will and POA. And by the way, POA, I just said it a minute ago, but to clarify, power of attorney.
Power of attorney, yeah.
Yeah, okay. Sure. Okay. So, per ABC11.com, Blanche Moore had maintained a detached demeanor during the entire trial, because this was all during the trial, by the way. This was all read and testified and all that. So, during the whole trial, she had maintained a detached demeanor with a tight smile for the cameras, tightly trained to her throughout. But as the guilty plea was read, surprise, and jurors filed past, she wept. Quote, she said to me, the end has come. Let it come. We'll deal with it, end quote, defense attorney David Tammer said afterwards. Quote, although she was strong in that regard, it was painful to see her broken by that verdict, end quote.
That's so weird to me because, like, what you're supposed to do once you've been found guilty is to stand up and say to the family, hey, I am so sorry for what you have been put through. I will do what I can to ensure that I become a better citizen and society. You never admit to it, obviously. Whatever. But, like, it's saying something like that, that's so, like...
Well, that's... No, he said that afterward, not in the court. Like, that was an interview afterward with her defense attorney.
I thought they were just like, defense attorney Dave Tammer said afterward. No, yeah. I thought it was like right then, once they read the verdict.
The microphone's right up at the attorney saying, what do you think about the verdict?
Oh, yeah. Well, right as they walk out. Yeah, exactly. Whatever.
Blanche Moore's family was also devastated. Because of the publicity in the case, many family members never believed that she would get a fair trial. Quote, everything we've been able to learn about her is a picture of a model person, one of her defense attorneys said about her conviction after her conviction. That in and of itself should have run up the reasonable doubt flag for the jury. But I'm afraid there is just too much poison and too many different people. End quote. Are you on the defense side or the prosecution side? Like, did you really... There's too much poison and too many different people. You are quoted with that, sir.
Please don't say something like that. My guy. My fellow human in Christ. Please.
He was later fired from his partnership.
Go back to law school. You know what? You don't need law school. You need a communications course.
How to win over and influence people. 101.
Have you ever heard of Dale Carnegie?
That's what I was thinking about. Definitely had that course.
Oh, shit.
So anyway,
so it's guilty.
The trial concluded with a guilty verdict by the jury on November 14th. The jury recommended the sentence of death, which was the judgment rendered on November 16th of 1990. An order to stay was entered almost immediately, 10 days later, on November 26th, pending the appeal process, of course. Of course, her defense claimed that she didn't get a fair trial due to the prosecutors being allowed to talk about the other poisonings, which we kind of alluded to. Per ABC11.com, quote, connecting the death of James Taylor with that of Raymond Reed and the illness of Dwight Moore, unless they make that direct connection, then the evidence is clearly not admissible, the defense team argued. A Supreme Court justice posed the question to state attorneys. How do you tie the defendant into these similar poisoning incidents? What is the evidence that connects her to them? The response was a crushing blow. I quote, I think if there's any doubt about the tie-in between Blanche Moore and these three individuals and their arsenic poisoning, it comes from the actual confession letter itself, Your Honor. The confession letter itself is not her confession letter, by the way. I don't know why they said confession letter, because that's referring to something else. But I think they're actually talking about just the documentation in general. But the quote was weird. In 1994, the High Court concluded that Moore had received a fair trial and rejected the defense motion. In doing so, the Supreme Court justices noted that the state, quote, the state presented extensive circumstantial evidence marking the similarities between Reed's death and the arsenic poisonings. Poisoning death of Taylor and the arsenic poisoning of Moore. Three different men, either married to or intimately involved with Blanche, died or barely escaped death from arsenic poisoning, an unusual cause of death. In each case, the defendant had motive, financial, opportunity, close relationship, and means, which was the knowledge of and access to the anti-ant product that had the arsenic. In each case, medical evidence suggests that multiple doses of arsenic were administered to the victims over a long period of time, as opposed to one large lethal dose. In each case, the defendant was frequently alone with the victim in the hospital, and medical testimony suggests that certain of defendant's visits in which she fed the victim corresponded with an onset of symptoms characteristic of arsenic poisoning. In each case, the defendant was heard to say that she hated the victim or that the victim was cruel or evil. In the cases of Reed and Taylor, defendant was already seeing her next victim at the time of the arsenic assaults. End quote. So, like, they're saying, yeah. Dude, you can't sit here and say that they are not correlated. Come on. Like, no. Sorry. Try again. Let's try a different,
yeah.
different way of going about this. That's not going to work. So another weird part of this case was that there was a confession letter from a homeless man who is now deceased named Garvin Thomas. It was supposedly a deathbed confession from a man that was infatuated with Blanche. He claims to have killed Reed by fatally poisoning him, which, by the way, we already determined that was over a long period of time. I don't know how this guy had that much access to him, but okay.
Samantha, how often do you allow an unhoused person to come in and make your potato soup for you?
Whenever they like to.
Please. Please. I would allow it. Please. I would pay you.
Well, after handwriting experts reviewed the document, they concluded the letter had been written by none other than Blanche herself. And they had...
Oh, no. I saw that coming.
And they had a 99% degree of certainty that Thomas, at the very least, was not the person who wrote the letter.
Oh, no.
Who saw that coming? I mean...
I didn't.
I knew you didn't.
Does he know how to make potato soup?
She taught him.
Oh, God.
Blanche has been on death row at North Carolina Correctional Institute for Women in Raleigh since her conviction, apparently writing music and poetry. I simultaneously have a morbid curiosity about this, and I kind of want to hear it, but I also really don't because I'm afraid my ears will bleed.
Well, I'm not going to support anybody who is...
I kind of want... Like, the morbid curiosity is like, I almost want to see how bad it is. But I also don't. So it kind of goes hand in hand. But I'm not going to support them, obviously. She's gone through many health issues, which is not surprising since she's been in prison for 33 years and just turned 91, including chemotherapy and radiation therapy. She's also had two violations during her time on death row. One for disobeying orders in February of 2008, and the other for misuse of medicine in November of 96. Now, how in the hell did she get her hands on medicine? And what? In 96. So she's only been on death row for 6 years at that point.
But also, like, what medication are you going to, like, misuse? 96, like, it was before the opioid epidemic. And so what?
It didn't specify
like
what kind.
Like, what was it?
It didn't say anything about what kind. So I don't know. But she misused it. Whatever that
means.
I don't want to know. I don't think. She's still serving her sentence on death row as the appeals process still has not been exhausted, which is hard to believe. She's never confessed to any of her crimes, let alone murder, and professes her innocence to this day. Now, I'm going to leave you on a crazy note, but crazily, Reverend Moore filed for divorce shortly after her conviction in December of 1990.
I'm sorry, Tucker. I'm so sorry.
How could he?
I'm so shocked.
He did eventually remarry and move to Virginia, and he died of natural causes in 2013. But yeah,
oh,
I mean, like,
God.
How could he just move on like that? After all she did.
Not the Reverend.
All that.
Not the Reverend. The weird tasting potato soup.
Anyway, so that is the case. I don't even know if I'd call it crazy. That was a crazy episode of a case of a Black Widow.
Sorry. I haven't been like on the other side of a case for a little bit, so hey. I didn't know how to react.
Excuse you. It's not been that long.
No, but also, I didn't take my medication
today.
I'm so sorry.
This is the unmedicated covering of the case.
So I have my emotional support dog here at the end.
I see. Well, I'm taking my exam on the 15th. We'll get back to a regular thing.
He's like, please let me go. Somebody help me. Oh, God.
Oh, yeah,
you're
so cute.
You're fine. Oh, God.
That's it. That's all I got.
That was great. Thank you. I'm just, like, curious. Did she ever, like, come out with, like, a cookbook?
Not that I know of. No, she was coming out with poetry and music. Remember?
I'm so sorry.
I already said that. Poetry and music.
It's so morbid. I shouldn't say shit like that. Kelsey, cut all of that. No, don't cut it.
What's the point at this point if we've made it through this episode?
I'm going to say it anyway.
It's very accurate.
Oh, God. No, I think it's great that she has found, like, enjoyment in her afterlife within the prison. Not, like, death, but, like, afterlife within that. That's a weird way to say that. No, I think... That's good. That's good for her. Great for her. But also, don't poison people.
That's a fair lesson to take from this whole episode. It's just don't do that.
The basics of what I got.
Okay. That's fair.
I'm glad you can paint. Please don't poison people.
Hey, you have danced around what I actually said this entire poetry and music. Can't paint, I'm assuming, since it wasn't mentioned.
So maybe she probably did.
Her art was in her cooking, and unlike another previous Black Widow that I covered where they let her go into the kitchen while she was in the prison, this one they kept out.
Also, still not okay with that. I'm still upset about that one.
I still don't understand what happened. Like, did they misplace her record? And they were like, oh, you like to cook? Cool. Just go on back. my dude.
I have no idea.
And meanwhile, this lady but can also, misuse yeah, medication. But, I don't know.
Yeah, it had to be like she got like Tylenol or something like that, and she like gave it away because there's no way that illegal drugs would like or like high end drugs would go to the prison system, right?
Surely not.
Anyways, this has been great, Samantha. Bang up job.
By the way, we have a TikTok account now, guys. So please feel free to go on there and show us some love, give us some likes, give us a follow. It is going to be at reaper.tales.podc. And, you know, interact with us too. We kind of like talking to people when it's not in person. So that works.
And if we upload this video to YouTube, you can see me like fixing my nose because I have gross sinus stuff. Anyways. Go to our TikTok and counteract the weird people who are trying to stand up for somebody that we bullied from the 1800s.
Apparently.
Because they need help with that, I guess. I don't know.
It'll be okay.
Until next time, we love you. We mean it.
Okay, bye.
The Reaper will come for us all.
And I also showed everybody that was around me at the time his hot dog, okay? And that's not like an innuendo for anybody listening to this podcast. It was an actual hot dog. I'm done. I'm done talking. Oh, my God.
This is supposed to be a serious episode,
Montana. We're all impressed with his hot dog, okay? Can I retire? I'm done.
No, this is way too good. Kelsey's going to run out of paper in a minute. She's making so many notes.
I'm so sorry. I'm going to be quiet the rest of this. Go ahead.
No, this is giving her so much material to use for the coming weeks.